And now the opinion page. Last year, as John Edwards ran for the Democratic presidential nomination, his wife Elizabeth knew, but did not reveal, that he had had an affair. In an interview about her new book, Resilience, she told NPR's Michelle Norris that she had mixed feelings about a public figure she loved and about a man who had betrayed her.
I was hesitant. I was hesitant about how I was supposed to go out and talk about him. But honestly, the policies he talked about were, you know, in my view, so far superior to what other people were talking about. The public person, the person who wanted to serve, was really on the right track and about our responsibilities to one another. He just failed in his responsibilities to me. And frankly, you know, as though it didn't turn out that way, it could have been to other people who had supported him as well. He didn't get the nomination, but not because of any of the things that he had done privately.
Many who admired Elizabeth Edwards' strength and integrity now criticize her for allowing her husband's presidential campaign to continue. Some wonder why she has a book out now, and some argue that she's still not being honest with herself or with others. If you'd like to join this conversation, our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also weigh in on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Rebecca Traister is a senior writer at Salon.com, where she covers women in politics and media. She's at our bureau in New York. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
And in your piece at Salon.com, you wrote, "I am not the only person wondering, as we commence one of the most sadomasochistic publicity jaunts in political history, what on earth Elizabeth Edwards is trying to accomplish."
Yes, there are a lot of people wondering that. This is a very hard book tour to watch, I think, for a lot of people. Whether or not they were invested in the Edwards campaign to begin with or invested in Elizabeth Edwards to begin with, this is a very painful conversation she's having on radio stations and on with Oprah and all over the media right now.
And you are among those who supported not just the Edwards campaign, but specifically Elizabeth Edwards.
I am a longtime admirer of Elizabeth Edwards, and I was initially an Edwards supporter, of course, primarily because I cared about the issues that he was talking about, poverty and class. In terms of the personalities of that campaign, though, it was Elizabeth in whom I was perhaps most invested. I really believed her to be the intellect and the brains behind the Edwards political package. And I was a great admirer of her public and always well-articulated strength. Strength is something she has talked and written a lot about in the context of her son's death, Wade's death, as a teenager, her own battles with cancer. She's always talked very publicly and very beautifully about the power of about resilience, which is the title of the book that she's publishing this week. And she told the New York Times when her cancer returned and she and her husband announced that they would continue their presidential campaign that she wanted to teach her children to stand tall in a stiff wind. And I remember just being sort of absolutely struck by that sentence.
Hmm. And yet now she was victimized by her own husband, and you criticize her for writing a book about being a victim.
Well, I'm not quite criticizing her for writing a book about being a victim. Of course, she has the right to write about anything she wants to and write about whatever experiences of pain she wants to. I am wondering why she wants to bring this out in the public. I'm wondering why she's doing it now when it strikes me that she's not quite fully prepared to talk completely about the experience. There seem to me to be some blind spots that she still has, and she seems to be working through a process of dealing with, for example, the question of paternity of Riel Hunter's baby. Many people speculate might be John Edwards' baby.
Mm-hmm.
In her long, extensive, and very raw interview with Oprah Winfrey last week, she seemed ill-prepared to quite talk about that with the precision and sharpness that she talks about other experiences of pain and suffering in her life. And I think that that's very painful for people to watch, someone who hasn't worked through all the ways in which they are still hurting and suffering, even as they're trying to tell you that, oh, it's all, you know, I've got it pretty much figured out.
Yeah. It's a difficult thing to figure out. In what way is she denying, reality, as you would suggest, about the paternity of the baby?
Well, in her conversation with Oprah, she repeated over and over again that it didn't matter whether or not John Edwards was the father of Riel Hunter's baby. I should also note that she herself does not use the name Riel Hunter for reasons that may be very good, but I'm using it because it's been widely published. That's the name of the woman with whom John Edwards has admitted to having an affair. She repeatedly said that if the baby is John's, it has nothing to do with her life. It doesn't affect me at all. It might affect John, but it doesn't affect me. And this struck me as not quite honest with herself. Of course, it might have an impact on her life. If, in fact, the baby, who she refuses to even sex, she called it it. It's a little girl. If the baby happens to be John Edwards, which we don't know, then her three children will have a half-sibling. And as we know, very sadly, Elizabeth Edwards is ill. And it seems to me that there are a lot of things about the future, and she is terminally ill at this point, that she is naturally, understandably, extremely terrified about, and one of them may be the presence of this other woman who she's going around talking about. The presence of this other woman in her husband's life, in her children's life, in the future. If, in fact, John Edwards is the father of Riel Hunter's baby, then of course this is going to have an impact on Elizabeth's life and on her children.
We're talking with Rebecca Traister of Salon.com, and, well, the subject is obvious, Elizabeth Edwards' new book and her publicity tour surrounding it. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email us talk@npr.org. And there is another aspect that a lot of people are questioning about Elizabeth Edwards, and it is precisely that moment when she found out about the affair and elected to stand with her husband as he continued the campaign.
I think that this is the area where I feel the most critical about what she's talking about. As an Edwards supporter, and many, many Edwards supporters out there understand that this, had he continued, had he become the nominee, the Democratic Party's nominee, and it had been revealed at some point during the campaign, not only that he had had an affair, which is quite common in politics at this point, but this is a man who'd already made his family, his marriage, his wife's health, the loss of his teenage son, part of his political story. And had it been revealed that he had not only had an affair, but had an affair while his wife was ill with cancer, had an affair with a woman who he employed as a videographer for his presidential campaign, I think that it's pretty certain that this would have caused him a lot of trouble as a candidate. So all those people who had invested in him because they believed in his, the people Elizabeth was talking about when she was talking to Michelle Norris, I agree the issues he was representing were vital to the health of the nation. But had he was imperiling his chances to work for those people he claimed he wanted to work for, because the fact is that he would have had a very hard time getting elected had it been revealed that he had had this affair, which Elizabeth knew about going into the campaign.
And do you think that she's being honest with herself when she talks about the reasons why she elected to stand next to him?
I think it's very hard. I think that's a very hard question to answer. I think she is straining to be as honest as humanly possible. In many ways, as surprised and confused as I am by her book and by the series of revelations she's making here, I, again, if not admire, then at least marvel at her attempts to be as transparent as possible. Listening to her describe her fear, her self-doubt, when it comes to talking about certain aspects of the affair is just breathtaking because, you know, we know that staring voyeuristically at other people's marital and sexual indiscretions is, we have a long literary narrative tradition of that that goes back basically to the beginning of human history. To hear somebody who is in a position of having been cuckolded, who is also in a position of being ill, describe her anxieties, her fears, and her pain can often be breathtaking. And I think she's trying her best to be honest. I don't know what's inside her head. I can only make the guesses. For example, when it comes to talking about something obvious like the paternity of the baby and how that could have an impact on her life, I think she's trying to be honest.
Let's see if we get some callers into the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And Jennifer's on the line calling from Denver.
Hi.
Hi, Jennifer.
Here's my point of view on this. I think that for who she is at this stage of her life and with her own mortality being faced, when she says, this doesn't affect my life, I think what she means by that is, I know who I am as a person, and all this other stuff goes around me. I'm still this person. And I haven't read the book. I've heard her interview with Oprah and some of her interview on the Today Show. And when she talks about how she had to really question sort of who she was and how she fit, having all these expectations of what her marriage was and what her life was, and then have all of that thrown in her face, to me, that's what she means when she says, this doesn't affect my life. That means I know who I am, and all this other crap can go on around me, and I am this person, and that does not affect my life. And for that, I think it's a sign of strength, and I admire her, and I'm heartbroken for her at this point in her life, but I'm also grateful and joyful that she has found that sense of herself.
Rebecca?
And I think that's good.
Well, I think that is both a persuasive and powerful reading of what she said, and I'm sure that to an extent you're right. Again, that goes back to the aspect of this that I do admire or marvel at, which is the ability to say, this is how much I've been hurt, this is what's happened to me, this is what's happened to me in public, and now I am publicly redefining what it means. But I also think that in the context of her also talking, as she has with Oprah, about this other woman in extremely aggressive terms, and talking about her as someone who was trying to take her place in her life, you know, she said, I've built this house, built this family, and this woman wants to come in and just take it and change places with me. I think it's also clear that she has fears about Riel Hunter's place in her family's future, and that to pretend that we can't hear those fears is not accurate. I think we can hear those fears, and that's another part that she's perhaps not able to articulate.
That may be. Like I say, I haven't read the book. If she speaks to that in the book, I could believe it completely, because I've heard that too, I've heard her express that she doesn't know kind of in her absence what will happen. And
all right, Jennifer, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking with Rebecca Traister of Salon.com, who covers women and politics and the media, about Elizabeth Edwards' Walk of Pain, as she described, titled her commentary. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Marie. Marie with us from Baltimore.
Hello.
Hi, Marie. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just personally believe that the reason why she even writes the book is more so with regards to the fact that she wants to find closure, even if she's not quite there yet. I'm not certain that she's quite there with closure, but I think she knows she's terminally ill, and she sort of needs closure, and public closure as much as individual closure, and I think that's how come she comes off saying, this does not affect my life, even if the reality is it affects her life. If you're going to be a stepmother to a child, it's going to affect your life, whether or not you're alive or dead.
She does have cancer. It has been described as terminal. The last time we spoke with her, she said the prognosis, however, is for years rather than months. And this is something that she might die with as opposed to from. But nevertheless, let's get Rebecca Traister's response to the closure argument.
Well, I think closure is another way of saying... one way of saying that she's also trying to wrestle control of this particular narrative. I mean, here is a woman, and we've talked about her remarkable ability to turn tragedy and misfortune in her life into something to be learned from, something that she can stand stiffly against the wind that's mm-hmm. coming toward her. And I think that there's an impulse to when your life has been pulled out of order by, say, your husband's public indiscretion and infidelity, to take control by writing it you tell the story yourself, and thereby take the tragedy into your own narrative voice. And I think that's a strong element of what she's doing, and I think that does relate to the closure argument. It's not exactly the same thing, but she is trying to take control and take power over the circumstances that have humiliated and saddened her publicly.
To me, in all of that, to me, in essence, is finding closure, finding a way to deal with it, however it is that she is going to deal with it, be it control, be it, but coming to terms with it. And I think that she's not fully personally as an individual, she's not come to terms with it, but she's finding a way how to deal with it just by putting it out in the book.
Okay.
I would also like
to
add...
the process, put it that way. Like when I looked at her, and then I haven't read the book, but when I looked at her, I watched parts of the interview and I said, oh, she's not quite there yet, but she's looking for ways to come through.
I think that that one of the elements of this, and again, there's a vague embarrassment that we're having this conversation to begin with, right? Is it John Edwards' love child? I mean, there's something quite tawdry about just the fact that we're having this conversation on the radio today. But given that it is the story of a political candidate, a one-time presidential hopeful, and that Elizabeth Edwards has written, published, and is now publicizing this book, I will continue to have the speculative conversation about paternity. The fact that we don't know for sure whether or not it's John Edwards' baby gives all of this. There's no way that this can have closure because there's such a strong element of the story that she's telling that remains unresolved for everybody out there who's picked up not just a tabloid, but the New York Times. We don't know how one strain of this story is going to end. And so it's very hard for her to achieve closure, which is one of the reasons I think we're having this conversation.
Would she have been better off, and this is a scenario you talk about in your piece, if when she learned that her cancer had come back and that they had the news conference to say, we're going to continue the campaign, you said, look, at that moment, nobody would have asked any questions if John Edwards had said, given this, I must stay with my wife and my family. Nevertheless, the Inquirer wouldn't have stopped. The story would have come out, and we would still know about the affair that was sort of behind it. Again, the campaign would not have been betrayed, but...
Well, I think that there are a lot of... Had that taken place, that was, in many ways, the perfect out. And, in fact, not only would people not have asked questions, but if you'll remember, there was a lot of criticism, and to my mind, undeserved criticism, of the Edwards continuing the campaign. There were a lot of people looking in and saying, how can they do this when she's sick? And it was people criticized them for staying in the campaign when her cancer came back and they announced it. And so not only, and by the way, again, I do not agree with that level of criticism. I greatly admired both of them for that choice and their ability to articulate why they were making it. But in retrospect, now that we know how imperiled his candidacy was from the start, it would have made perfect sense to use that moment as the exit from the campaign. No one would have asked questions. I don't know. I'm sure the Inquirer would have run the story, but it would have not had the same kind of bombshell effect as it did. This was a man who continued to ask for the nation to nominate him.
Rebecca Traister joined us from a bureau in New York where she's a senior writer at Salon.com and wrote the article, Elizabeth Edwards' Walk of Pain. You can find a link to it at npr.org/talk. Thanks very much. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.